on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement and I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. A very, very busy programme for you this morning because we'll be hearing from the count centres in Kerry as the local election count gets underway. Donal O'Connor from Tarbert tells the story of an uncle of his who was in the British Navy and lost his life on the 8th of June, which is today's date, 1940, in the evacuation of the King and Queen of Norway to London. And Donal is in his 90th year, he won't mind me telling you, and I was talking to him yesterday and he was out on the farm. UCC folklorist Shane Lahan will tell us about the half plough, half spade, the amazing lie. Shane celebrates the ancient vernacular digging tool. And we'll also have our Kerry County Council Creative Kingdom, where we'll be talking about Crinoune an Óg and the Concortan Festival. But like I said, it is count day in Kerry and across the country for the local elections. The European elections will be count will be taking place over the next period of while as well. But all the promises have been made at the door. Don't forget me now. And I'll give you my number one. If you don't give me number one, give me the number two. Posters popped up around the place like mushrooms, and we've seen all our councillors, proposed councillors, and aspiring councillors' faces all over the county. The atmosphere, the anticipation will be building now in the county centre. It's quite a place to be if you've ever gone there. There's a real buzz of excitement and busy, a busyness around the place. The tally people will be out collecting. The tallies, of course, are kind of predicting what will happen. And then you have the counts as they come in and the buzz around the place. And there's triumphs, there's tragedies. Not major tragedies, though, but I suppose of the political kind. But we will be bringing you all of that over the next day or two or whatever it takes to bring you the results. And so stay tuned to Radio Kerry. You're not one to going to miss any updates. Also on the Radio Kerry webpage as well, radiokerry.ie, there's a live update blog there, and this was absolutely fantastic in the last election. You'd be glued to it because there's constant updates on it, as well as stay tuned to the Radio Kerry the traditional way, like I said, on the radio or on the app, wherever you're listening to us. And there is a few special programmes as well between 1 and 1.45, anchored by Jerry O'Sullivan and Deirdre Walsh, and then in the evening as well. And as well as, like I said, we'll be bringing you regular updates as anything happens, so stay tuned for that. And to begin the morning, we are going to go to the Killarney Sports and Leisure Centre first, where we'll hear from Amber Galway.
Radio Kerry's local election results, live from the Killarney Count Centre. With thanks to Batrooms For You, Kerry's number one batroom company, b4u.ie.
Thanks, Joe. Good morning. You're very welcome to the Killarney Sports and Leisure Centre. There's lots of excitement and nerves, I think, here this morning. The boxes are being opened. So there are 268 boxes in Kerry. That includes the postal vote and the special vote in the local elections 2024. So there are six local electoral areas. Tralee, which has 52 boxes. Castle Island has 35 boxes. Listowel, there are 53 boxes there. 46 boxes in Killarney. Kinmare has 52 boxes and 28 boxes in Corcaguina. So the sorting of the votes is underway at the moment in the Killarney Sports and Leisure Centre. The European papers will be sorted and transferred to the Count Centre in Cork by Army Escort, and that will take place later today. The Corcaguina boxes are open now and they'll be followed by the Castle Island boxes shortly. Once these boxes are sorted, all the tallies will be taking place here in Killarney. And once those are done and dusted, they'll be transported then to the John Mitchell Centre in Tralee, where the count proper will begin then. And it's expected that the boxes should arrive over in Tralee for Corcaguina at around 11 o'clock. So we're hoping that the counts there will get underway shortly after 11 this morning. Castle Island is expected then to arrive in and around 12 o'clock today, so that's all according to schedule, and obviously is subject to change depending on how quick or slow the tallies take. So sorting will continue in Killarney then for the remaining boxes. So this could take until around tea time. So counting in Tralee, Listowel, Killarney and Kinmare LEAs is hoped to get underway tonight, but it depends on how the tallies go, as I said, and the results maybe, you know, if the first count mightn't be here until tomorrow for those areas. It's hoped that the Castle Island and Cork Aguina, we'll know who will be sitting in those areas later today. So again, this year Kerry is divided up into six local electoral areas, which is the same as the local elections in 2019. So there are six seats up for grabs in Listowel. There are seven seats on offer in Tralee. Kinmare has six seats. Castle Island has four seats. Cork Aguina has three seats, and there are seven seats in Killarney on offer. The local electoral areas of Castle Island and Cork Aguina then come together to form the municipal district of Castle Island and Cork Aguina, which when together has seven seats. So it's a similar size to the other MDs. So the first meeting of the new look Kerry County Council, when we know who will be sitting on it, will take place on the 21st of June, and then the Cathaoirleach look will be elected during the AGM, and the AGM then for the various MDs will take place following these. So there's lots of excitement. A lot of the candidates and the sitting councillors are here with their tally people, and there's a sense of excitement, a sense of nerves, I suppose, as well. You know, it's all ahead of them and it's all to play for. But we'll have coverage. We'll bring you everything as it happens on air, on our website and on social media. Later in the day, we'll have political experts in on panels. So stay tuned to us here on Radio Kerry, because we'll have the very best of coverage, and we'll bring you everything as it happens from the Killarney Sports and Leisure Centre and from Tralee as well.
Yeah, and Amber, will there be tallies this morning, do you think? And I suppose the other question is, how accurate do you think those tallies are?
Well, the tallies always come with a warning, Joe, so I suppose, you know, the tally people are really, really experienced, and they know what they're doing. They've been doing it for years, but I suppose we just have to be careful and you know that they are tallies, and not all the boxes everywhere do get open depending on the size, you know, how many voters. So it's all to play for, and I suppose, again, while the tallies can be very accurate as well, the count starts, you know, and the transfers of votes comes into play, things can be changed up there as well. So it's all to play for. The tallies will give us a good indication, but again, you know, it all comes down to the count, I suppose, and how it all works out there. But we do expect tallies this morning.
Yeah.
So as I said, the tallies are underway at the moment for the Cork Aguina area, and the Castle Island area is due to start shortly after that. So we'll be bringing you updates throughout the morning from those areas, and then once they're sorted and moved to Tralee, the other areas, the four remaining areas, so Tralee, Listowel, Killarney and Kinmare, tallies will get underway for them as the day progresses.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. You mentioned a few of the families, a few of the councillors there. Is there a bit of a buzz there? Is there a crowd gathering already at this early stage?
There certainly is. There's a huge crowd here at the moment. Lots and lots of people here. I think they're each entitled to bring five tally people with them, you know, to help them, I suppose, with the tallies. So there's a big crowd here, and lots of the candidates, lots of the sitting councillors that I mentioned, and lots of people who would be steeped in politics, you know, going back years and years are here. I suppose it's a great place to be if you're interested in politics, and there is a great atmosphere and a great buzz. And there is a small bit of tension, I suppose, and a bit of nerves as well, as people await to see how the people of Kerry voted.
Very good. Well, Amber, I hope you had your ready break, because you've a long day ahead of you, and no doubt you'll be bringing us anything as soon as it happens. But for now, Amber Galway, thanks a million for that.
Thanks, Joe.
That is Amber Galway there, and like I said, throughout the day we'll be bringing you anything from the count centre. We'll be bringing you reaction, we'll be bringing you tallies, we'll be bringing you counts as they come in as well, and this is the place to be for all your local election coverage on Radio Kerry across all our platforms as well. And like I said, radiokerry.ie, there's a live updates blog there as well. But let's continue with the programme, and I read an amazing article by UCC folklorist Shane Lahan a while ago now about the half plough, half spade, the amazing lie. Shane Lahan, why did you choose this item to write about, and how important was it?
Well, Joe, I know. There are things that come into your head and they stay in there for a little while, and you'd be searching around for an idea. And this one kept coming up. And to be very honest, you know, my first introduction to the lie was when we were back in school and we were doing the great Playboy, the Western Burl Sings great play. And I remember Christy Mahon the playboy, and he didn't he his, kill his father, old man.
That's right.
Swinging the lie and splitting him open, and didn't he wasn't pegging Mike in the hole. Every time he told the story, it got bigger and he got great. But the lie kept coming up, and of course, I had no idea when I was a young fella really what a lie was or anything of that sort. But that was my first introduction to it, and the first way it went in. And then many moons later, when I started doing my various folklore studies and so on, I was bringing students. I used to bring students up to the wonderful Ulster Folk and Transport Museum just outside Belfast. And I met there the most magnificent people. Sadly now, one of them has passed away, the great Jonathan Bell. And he always worked with his compatriot, Mervyn Watson. And the two lads were above, and they've done more for the history of farming and the history of agricultural machinery and equipment and horses and ploughs than anybody else, really. But I remember Mervyn opening up a shed, literally, a big, long shed. And the whole length of the shed, Joe, from one end to the other, was full of different Irish spades, different types, hundreds of different ones from different parts of the country, the national spade collection. But he picked out one, he dragged it out with him, a big heavy bulk of a thing, and he introduced me to the lie, the Irish lie. And when I put my eyes on that, I don't think I ever saw anything like it. Literally, as you said, he described it as half a spade, half a plough. It was as heavy and as big and as bulky. So that's what got me thinking. And I was, you know, because I'm writing for the Farmer's Journal every so often, I thought this would be of interest to people involved in farming.
Yeah. So describe the implement and what way was it used and what was it used for?
Well, it's funny, on radio, you have to describe everything, absolutely. It has to be seen to be believed. But there are two aspects to it, okay? We'll break it into its two parts if we can. So one, which is amazing, is that it's made really from a piece of iron, funnily enough, like you would imagine, any spade. But the beauty of this is that it had to be forged very carefully, because the secret of the lie was that anyone, and long ago, like, you didn't go into a shop and buy a lie, okay? You went to your local blacksmith, okay? Mm. And the blacksmith would get a piece of what they called raw iron that time, which had to be forged, it had to be put into the fire, it had to be heated, and then it had to be absolutely sledged, but usually by one or two men, until it was malleable and it was open, but it was ready for strength. But what was important was that you also bought a little piece of steel with you, and the steel, of course, had a much higher quality to it, and that had to be, you know, there was no welding or anything of that time. That literally had to be beaten, and they had to be melded, they had to be melted together, and they had to be created that way. So the first part of the lie was this incredible amount of blacksmithing, and that's really where the secret was. We mightn't appreciate it now, but that was a huge part of it. The second part then was, in its own way, was great, because when I was reading about this, and I was researching this, I was looking at different things, that the handle of the lie, as you and I might call it, wasn't ever referred to as a handle. It was literally called a tree, the loy tree. Okay. And the tree was essentially a piece of ash, if you could get it. The ash used to be felled, beautiful heavy ash, no, not a branch or anything like that, because most importantly, when any fella was going for a handle long ago, Joe, they always went for something that was heavy. Right. You and I might say, oh, look, you know, we want something light here, because it would be hard work, you know, but no, because anything light was usually a branch. The heavier a handle it was, the stronger it was, right, and the less likely it was to break. So what they would do is that they would fell the tree. They'd cut into planks. Now, we put it to a sawmill, but long ago, again, with, you know, pre-mechanization, pre-all of that, you actually had the saw pit, where you had one fella down in a hole in the bottom with a big long saw, another fella on the top, and they would have to cut the piece of timber into planks. But the beauty of the lie then was that they left a big, what was called a heel, a big round at the bottom of the lie. And what that meant was that when you were then employing it later on, when you were going to dig with it, you actually had a kind of a lever. And this the great thing was that you literally would employ the lie by pushing it in underneath the root. Now, the great thing about this is that we think of ploughs today. We think of machinery going in, tractors going in, pulling ploughs, dragging things down. But if you want to grow anything, you have to actually turn the soil from underneath the root, and that's where the lye was the absolute dinger. It was brilliant. Mm. You cut down, first of all, let's say vertically, you turned it horizontally and you pushed it in underneath the root, and then because it was a heel on it, you would push down in the handle and it would literally turn over the sod magnificently. So it was ideally suited to the way people, and we're going back into a medieval period,
yeah,
even a prehistoric period when we think about this, you know.
Yeah, it's an amazing kind of an invention, isn't it? And like, so important, I'd imagine, to the people of the time, because that's what would have led to providing sustenance then for them and how they lived.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look around now, I still love travelling around, and down in Kerry, I love going around. But when I do, I look up in the mountain sides, and you'd often see, Joe, you still see those ridges, those cultivation ridges that were there, maybe from the famine period, we'll say. And they were all cultivated now using a spade, most likely like the lye, as we're describing it. So there's a kind of a remnant of a period of time when you had tough soil, and especially up in the north of Ireland as well, or in and around the Drumlin area, around places like Cavan, Leitrim, Fermanagh, those sort of areas where you had the glaciation going across at one point in time. They really needed this kind of, what I say, a kind of a major piece of a tool that wasn't going to break, that could combat those difficult soils. But there was another aspect to it as well. You never put the assembly of the lye was really an assembly between the blacksmith and the carpenter. So every locality had a blacksmith,
yeah,
and they had a carpenter. And the carpenter would always be, he was making everything from the coffins to the cradles little beds, turf barrows. He was doing all of that kind of stuff, right? But he would put the handle on the lye for you. But there was always a question then, not only putting the handle, there was also a step or a footing, you know, where you would push, maybe have to push the lye in under the root.
Yeah.
And that was either you were going to be left footed or you were going to be right footed. Now, most of us wouldn't take any notice of that, no. But in the past in Ireland, anything with the left foot was considered to be negative. Anyone who was a kitho,
the left hand, dealing cards, you couldn't do that.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely. So people took an awful lot of notice of that. And even if a fellow said, "Jesus, I can't be pushing with the right foot, like I push with the left foot," they'd always look at you a bit strangely, like you were the left footer, you know.
Yeah.
And he felt like going out of the church long ago when he was getting married. If he went out with the left foot first, they said, "Joe, he'll have years bad luck altogether." You always stepped out with the right foot.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that even when it comes to something as simple as a spade or a lye, the way whichever foot you put onto it when you're working, people read an awful lot into those kind of things.
Yeah, it's like the schlong for cutting the turf as well, isn't it? You know, where you put the foot on it.
Yeah. I mean, the lye, that one we were talking about, was also used in the bog, believe it or not, when it was really fibrous, when the top sod had fierce, when taking off the straw on the top of the sod as well.
Yeah.
It was ideal for kind of putting that off and putting it down into the hole then, you know.
Very good. Stay with us, Shane, because there's more I want to talk to you about. We will go to a break and we'll be talking more to Shane Lehan after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
That's what you're listening to, and all during the programme we will be bringing you updates from the Count Centre for the Local Elections. But joining me on the line is Shane Lehan, Course Director of Cultural and Heritage Studies in Cork College of Further Education, and also UCC folklorist. And we were talking about the amazing lie, Shane, before that, but I said while you were on, we're talking about electing our next chieftains in a way, you know, the local election candidates. But back in the day, I was talking to you there during the week, you know, about the different ways rulers used to behave, you know, back in ancient times.
Yeah. So, Joe, if I could manage to explain this now in the short time we have, I'll tell you it would be an accomplishment, because one of my areas of expertise would be the early medieval period. You could call it the kind of the Celtic period in Ireland, you know. Yeah. So long before we had democracy like we have today and elections that are going on today and so on, it was a very, very complex sort of time and area. But if we just took Kerry for a moment, which I think is kind of a really good way to think about this. Essentially, Kerry was what you might call a tua lango, kind of a tribe, you know. You had maybe North Kerry, and you had South Kerry there, you had Kirkcudbright, and you had Ibra, but you had, you know, your different kind of areas, if you like. And within that, of course, you had a whole body of people, and a lot of them would have worked together, and would be one of the great kind of groups that we have in Ireland, or in this time, were called the Finna. The Finna was the kin group, your brothers, your sisters, your relations, and so on. And it all went back to who your father was, who your grandfather was, and who your great-grandfather was, okay? So a lot of people identified themselves, first of all, what they called the Derb Finna, which was three generations back, or the Gael Finna, which was two generations back. You're a common grandfather, a common great-grandfather. And people, if you went back any further than that, they kind of lost count. There was too many of them there. So this was always changing and so on. But within all of that, they all had to kind of come together, and they had to decide who was going to be their ultimate leader. And to be the ultimate leader, to be the king, the Rí Tua, you had to be very influential, you know. And when I say very influential, first of all, you had to be perfect, okay? And you had to be perfect in two ways. You had to be very good looking, you had to be young, you had to be strong, you had to be healthy, you had to kind of command a sense of authority about you and so on. And you couldn't have any blemish on your body, okay? Because literally the king represented the land that was around. And when the king
this is like America's Next Top Model or something.
it's very funny. It's not very funny. It's very interesting, because if the king got an old pimple, or he got a boil on the back of the neck or something like that, that was representative that there was something wrong in the kingdom, you know. Or if he grew old, or if he grew wizen, or if he was sick, or he was coughing, or anything like that, he was the physical embodiment of the land. This is a really interesting sort of idea. And when the king then, he was bound by a thing called Fir Flahamin. Fir Flahamin was the truth of the ruler. Everything that the king said mattered. And if the king said the truth, everything was good. But if he said an untruth, if he let a fellow off for doing something that wasn't right and so on, that would come back to fester in the kingdom that was there. So you have great accounts of the good kings. When the kings were good, right? When the kings were good, you had apple trees weighed down with apples. The fish were jumping out of the rivers into people's arms so that they could say, "Eat me." There was fertility everywhere. Women were having twins and triplets and everything of that sort. But when the king was bad, when the king said something negative or whatever it might be, the kingdom then would go, there would be war, there would be pestilence, there would be disease, the cattle would dry up, the crops would fail, there would be doom and gloom. So to be the king in early medieval Ireland meant really that you were the complete embodiment of what was going on. And as soon then as the king went bad, you had to get rid of him. and to get rid of him, funnily enough, Joe, they had a variety of different ways of doing it, because one of the most interesting things we have in archaeology are these bog bodies, these bodies that we find in the bogs in Ireland. And one idea that we have is that they may have been, originally they may have been kings, because way back in the past, in the Celtic period, people believed in reincarnation. They believed that people were going to come back again. And if you had a bad apple, you didn't want them coming back again. So instead of killing him outright, as it were, you placed him literally in the bog, where he was kind of in a stasis, where he was in the deep freeze, and he wasn't going to come back to cause havoc again. So I'm glad to think that our electoral system has kind of changed a little bit.
It shows how far we've come. Well, Shane, thanks a million for coming on and giving us your amazing insight again. Always told so well as well. Shane, enjoy your weekend and get back out on the bike. It is great weather for it. And thanks for coming on and filling us in and all that. That was absolutely brilliant. That's Shane Lahan there. Now we will be talking about our democratic elections, and we'll be getting an update from the Killarney Sports and Leisure Centre there as the counts, as the votes have been coming in. They're being sorted, and we'll get an update there from David Nelligan after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
That's what you're listening to. Get in touch with us, 0667123666. You can text WhatsApp 083 300 3300. And we did get a comment from a caller saying there are two Kerry competitors who compete in the Loy Digging Competition. So that's still going on, which is wonderful to hear, preserving our culture. And now we are bringing you updates all through the day from our count centres. We're going to go to Killarney Sports and Leisure Centre now, and we're going to get the latest update there from David Nelligan.
Radio Kerry's local election results, live from the Killarney Count Centre, with thanks to Batrooms For You, Kerry's number one batroom company, b4u.ie.
Yeah, good morning, Joe, and we're about 35 minutes into the open, since the boxes have been opened here in Killarney Sports and Leisure Centre. Cork Aguina LEA was the first open this morning, and it is a three-seat constituency, seven candidates running in this area, including current councillors, Brandon Fitzgerald of Fianna Fáil, Seamus Cussey Fitzgerald of Fine Gael, and Michael O'Shea of Fianna Fáil, and also running are Sinn Féin's Robert Brosnan, Fine Gael's Tommy Griffin, Labour's Mike Kennedy, and the Green Party's Pather O'Fionnán. Now, so far, the tally, there's about 20% of the boxes have been tallied so far, and it's, I suppose, important to note that it's mainly West Kerry so far that the boxes have been opened in. So you're looking at Onascall, Castle Gregory, Clahan, Lispole, and Camp. And looking at, I suppose, that area, as it stands, Robert Brosnan is out in the lead from the boxes that have been tallied. He's got 578, according to the tallies here. Councillor Brandon Fitzgerald is at 422. Councillor Seamus Cussey Fitzgerald is at 326. Tommy Griffin is next up at 515. Mike Kennedy of the Labour Party is at 197. Pather O'Fionnán, 422. And Councillor Michael O'Shea, 377. So lots of West Kerry numbers up near the top at the start, but as I said, it's important to note that it is only 20% of the tally so far. And actually, just in the last couple of seconds, a box from St. Joseph's National School in Castlemaine has been opened, and Tommy Griffin's tally has shot way, way up. So obviously it's, you know, local area there as well. So yeah, so it's, as it stands at the moment, only 20% of the tally, but early doors, but looking like it's Robert Brosnan at the top of the tally at the moment. So I will now pass you over to Mark Lynch, who is looking after the Castle Island local electoral area.
Yeah, thanks, David. This will be the next one open after Cork Aguina, and it's in a four-seater constituency, eight candidates going. So it's a pretty simple breakdown in that you've got the four sitting councillors are running again, and going up against them are four first-timers. So those sitting councillors are Charlie Farrelly and Jackie Healy-Ray, who are both independents. Jackie topped the poll last time. Charlie came in second. The other two sitting councillors are Bobby O'Connell of Fine Gael and Fionnán Fitzgerald of Fianna Fáil, and there are four challengers, as I say, all first timers actually as well. So they are Deirdre Bell of Sinn Féin, Michelle Keane independent, Courtney Reardon of AIM2, and Paul Bowler from the Green Party. Now, so the Castle Island electoral area has a total electorate of about 15,500, so we'll have to see what the turnout is. I'm not sure it'll be quite that high. 35 boxes are going to be opened from polling booths in the Castle Island local electoral area. They'll be opened here, they'll be sorted here, and they'll be closed back up then and sent over to Tralee for the official count. So we'll have some tallies from Castle Island this morning, but most of the work will be done in Tralee in terms of the official count for the Castle Island local electoral area. So we can now join Amber Galway, who's going to take us through the Tralee local electoral area.
So there are seven candidates vying for, there are 17 candidates vying for seven seats in the Tralee local electoral area. Among the 17 candidates are five sitting councillors who are hoping to retain their seats on Kerry County Council over the next 5 years. We're guaranteed to see some changes in the Tralee area as two sitting councillors, Fine Gael's Jim Finucane and Fianna Fáil's Johnny Wall, are retiring and they didn't contest the election. Of course, there are a lot of new and first-time candidates as well that are hoping to take a seat in the council, so it's all to play for here in the Tralee local electoral area. There are 52 boxes being opened. They'll be tallied here in Tralee a little later on today, and once the tallies are complete, they will be transferred over then to the John Mitchell Centre in Tralee, where the count proper will start. So that could start this evening or could be tomorrow, just depending on how quick the tallies take place, but they'll be transferred over there later today. And we're going to join David Nelligan now again, who's going to take you back over the Listowel electoral area.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. And in the Listowel electoral area, it is a 7-seat constituency and there is 12 candidates running in that area. Important to note, this time around, Listowel is a 6-seater. The last time out that Aoife Thornton topped the poll with over 2,500 first preference votes, but she, of course, is not running this time around. But you'll have Fine Gael's Mike Kennelly and Michael Foley hoping to, I suppose, wrap up the vote there. Also, Robert Beasley, he's not running this time either. So, so 2 seats up for grabs in Listowel. Well, I suppose all 6 seats are up for grabs in Listowel, but 2 big people, not sitting councillors, outgoing, so it'll be quite interesting. That'll be moved over to Tralee later on this afternoon.
Thanks, David. I'll now take you through Kinmare now, just the local electoral area there. That's a 6-seater again. We have 16 candidates going for that. Now, it's a fairly large electorate. You've got about just under 24,000 people. There's going to be 52 boxes opened from polling stations in that local electoral area. Now, interesting to note, there's 2 sitting councillors there as well, not seeking re-election. Those are Fine Gael's Patrick Connor-Scardine from Kinmare and Fianna Fáil's John Francis Flynn from Killorglin. So it'll be interesting to see maybe if their votes, their seats go geographically or along party lines. So who is running again? We've got 4 sitting councillors then. We've got Johnny Healy-Ray, independent from Kilgarvan. He topped the poll last time in 2019 and also in 2014 as well. Second place last time was Michael Cahill of Fianna Fáil. Fellow Fianna Fáil councillor Norma Moriarty then from Waterville is also a sitting councillor going again, and independent Dan McCarthy is also seeking re-election. As well as that, you've got Damien Quigg of Sinn Féin, you've got Podge Foley, independent, Teddy O'Sullivan, Casey Fine Gael, Tony Donnelly, Fine Gael, Stephanie O'Shea, Sinn Féin, Cleo Murphy, Green Party. We've got Oliver O'Neill, who's an independent, Patrick Lyne, independent, William O'Brien of the Irish People. We've got Tim Clifford of the Social Democrats and Katharina O'Sullivan from AIM2. So a total of 16 candidates there going for 6 seats, 4 sitting councillors. And two of the 6 will have to be replaced there. So there will be changes in the Kinmare local electoral area. Won't be a count there for probably quite a long time. Those boxes will be opened after 4. Tralee, Listowel, Castleland, and Kirkcaldy have all moved on. So they'll be opened for, I suppose, probably not a few hours yet. So we'll have to see how that plays out over the evening, how quickly they get to that. But we'll bring you that as soon as we can. And we'll now get a breakdown of the Killarney local electoral area with Amber.
Thanks, Mark. So again, here in the Killarney local electoral area, there are 17 candidates vying for 7 seats on Kerry County Council. 7 of those are sitting councillors, so that's independent councillor Brendan Cronin, Martin Grady, Maura Healy-Ray and Niall Botty O'Callaghan, along with Fianna Fáil councillor Niall Kelleher, Labour councillor Marie Maloney and Kerry Independent Alliance councillor John O'Donoghue. They're all contesting the elections and they're all hoping to retain their seats in the Killarney LEA. In 2019, the quota in Killarney was 1,584. Independent councillor Maura Healy-Ray topped the poll back then and she got over 3,000 first preference votes and she was elected on the first count. So it'll be interesting to see, will she retain that vote? Will she top the poll once again? We'll be finding out a little later on. There have been some changes from the 2019 elections in the Killarney LEA. So Kerry Independent Alliance councillor Michael Gleeson actually came in second in the 2019 elections, and he was one of the longest serving public representatives in the county. But he retired in 2021 and his nephew John O'Donoghue was co-opted onto Kerry County Council into his seat. So he's contesting the election here for the first time. Donal Grady also has retired since being elected in 2019. He retired in May of 2023 and his son Martin Grady was formally co-opted then onto his council seat in July 2023. So it's all to play for here. There's lots of new candidates again who put their name on the ballot paper and lots of first-time candidates who are hoping that they will take a seat on the council. So it's all to play for. The tallies will be done here in Killarney a little later on, and once those are completed the count will take place in Killarney here. So the Killarney box will be staying in Killarney. The count will be taking place either later today or tomorrow. Just again, it all depends on how quick the tallies come in, but as the tallies are coming in we'll keep you updated on what's happening there. And it's really all to play for in this area with 17 candidates vying for 7 seats. Back to you in studio, Joe.
Thanks a million for that, Amber, Mark and David, and they will be bringing you updates throughout the day, like I said, as it happens, and we'll be getting another update there. during our 10 o'clock news bulletin. Now we'll go to break, but after that we're going to have Donal O'Connor on from Tarbert. He tells the amazing story of an uncle of his who was in the British Navy and lost his life on the 8th of June 1940 in the evacuation of the King and Queen of Norway to London.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Yeah, that's what you listen to. Get in touch with us, 066-712-3666. You can text the WhatsApp, 083-300-3300. Now, I'm delighted to have my next guest on the line. I always enjoy talking to him, Donal O'Connor from Tarbert. He had an uncle who was in the British Navy and lost his life on the 8th of June, which is today's date, 1940, in the evacuation of the King and Queen of Norway to London. Donald, this is a fascinating story. Tell us about this, and you're very welcome.
Thank you, Joe, and good day to you and to the listeners. I'll tell you, my mother's family, Langan family from Kilpadog here in Tarbert, bones on the River Shannon, and 11 children, as there was 10 in my father's family and 9 in the Patchwell family. About 10 again, I think, in the Keane family. They were big families at that time. Lots of them immigrated to America, and some of them stayed at home. But two of the Langan boys, two uncles of mine, went to England. One of them, Jerry, got a job at Babcock and Wilcox, the boilermakers, and he worked there all during the war years. The other brother, who was younger, Mossy, joined the British Navy in early 1930s. And had a good time out in Malta, because my mother, who was younger than him, was at home, and she said the postcard just come from Malta showing the sunshine and all that was going with it out there in the Mediterranean, and they were seen for him being out there. But all that was to change when the war started. He was a crew member on board the aircraft carrier, the Glorious, and she had been built in 1918 as a battle cruiser. But when the need for an aircraft carrier came in then, later on in the time, they put a superstructure on her that could take fighter planes. And because of that, she was stationed out in Malta. The war started. The first job they had was they went out the Suez Canal into the Indian Ocean looking for the grass spray. They were hoping the planes on board would spot her. But by that time, the grass spray had gone down around and into South America, where she was sunk afterwards. But came back into the Mediterranean again, and by that time the Germans were invading. This was 1940, the war was 9 months on. The Germans were invading every place and advancing on all fronts. So they were advancing into Norway anyway. And the aircraft carrier and a flotilla of ships was sent up by the British Navy up to evacuate the King and Queen of Norway, members of Parliament, and also to fly off fighter planes that they had taken up there some time previously. So they flew off the fighter planes onto the Glorious, and with two destroyers, the Acosta and I forget the other one now, much the same name anyway.
Yeah.
They set out for home ahead of the rest of the fleet, because they were, apparently the Glorious was shot the fuel. But they were intercepted in the North Sea by two German battlecruisers, the Gneisenau and the Scharnhorst. And after a very short engagement, the three British ships were sunk. But not before one of the Ardent was the other destroyer, either the Ardent or the Acosta, got off a torpedo and it struck the Scharnhorst in the rudder. And the German ships put back into port, and they left the way clear for the rest of the fleet to come back down to England with the King and Queen of Norway and the members of Parliament. Now, that was fine, but there were questions asked in afterwards. There were 1,200 men lost in the sinking of the Glorious. And there were questions asked afterwards in the House of Parliament over a number of years as to why no effort was made to pick up the survivors of the previous sinkings.
Yeah.
And there was no, as is often the case, there was no explanation, I don't think, ever given, but I suppose it was important to get the King and Queen back to England anyway.
Yeah.
But the King and the idea, I think, was that they were afraid that Hitler if he got hold of the King and Queen and the Parliament, could set up a kind of a puppet government in Norway.
Yeah.
And thereby pretend that the Norwegian people were backing the Germans. You know, that was the idea, I think, in it. But I know that after the war, then some bit of time after the war, there was a big ceremony as they took the King and Queen back again to Norway.
Yeah. And was your uncle ever kind of recognised posthumously or anything like that? And like, how did you preserve the story? Was it just handed down? Was he ever recognised, you know, even after death, your uncle?
No, I remember, what it stayed in my mind always, was I grew up in Ballylongford. My father and mother had a shop there, and I'd be sent over to my grandmother.
Yeah.
For the summer holidays. And other times of the year as well, if there was a break, I spent a lot of time over there. And his photograph was up on the mantelpiece. It was about twice or three times as big as the postcard size of a very smiling, good-looking man in a navy uniform. And I can close my eyes, yes, and I can visualise that there, that particular photo. But I suppose at the time, were we still a bit going back to the time of the War of Independence and that, maybe it might have been the thing to do, maybe to be seen, not to be,
yeah.
I don't know.
A bit like Tom Crean's time, where you wouldn't really publicise that you were involved with the British and, you know, in the Navy.
That's it. It takes time for all those little stigmas to wear away.
Yeah. I'd imagine, like you mentioned about the postcards coming home, and I'm actually watching a documentary again around World War II, Hitler and the Nazis, Evil on Trial. It's on Netflix. It's actually very good. But, you know, about World War I that time, it was sold as adventure and to go around the world and, you know, see the world. And it was more like, it was advertised like it was a game rather than what actually the tragedies and atrocities that happened. But I wonder, was your uncle seeking adventure that time as well?
I'd say a lot of it was necessity as well.
Yeah.
I mean, 40 acres, farm, 11 children. I know four of the girls and one of the boys went to America. And a couple of the others stayed here at home, and their children were still around, thankfully. Cousins of my own. But two of the girls, four of the girls went to America, one girl went to England. My mother was the only one who stayed in Ireland. She was the youngest of the family. But I don't know what... I mean, there was nothing here for them.
Yeah.
I remember the war years in Ballylongford. That would be when the war started, 1939, 40, them years. I was the youngster. But the amount of people that were around, you had... Every family was... No, there were only one and two. Every family that time was six or eight children or more even. There was actually, I think, one family on record here in Talbot. I used to hear them saying long ago, there were 21 children survived in the family.
Yeah.
So if you think of what to do with all those children, you know, even at the moment now, the refugees that are coming in, you can see the little, and they're nothing like the amount of homegrown children that were there at that time. You can see the problem they're causing, you know.
Yeah, the commemorations normally there. You know, you're looking at the veterans. There won't be in a few years. There won't be any veterans left, will there? You know, you talk about that time.
No.
And like you were mentioning there, you were a youngster during it. It is important to remember that time, isn't it?
It is. But it gets. You know, there's a thing there, Joe. You probably have heard this. Those that govern write the history, those that suffer write the songs.
Yeah.
And I think that's terribly true, because a lot of the, I often think there now, if we go back a little bit further, when the grants of land were given to the landlords, maybe some landlord got 5,000 acres, we said somewhere in Tipperary. There's never a mention of the soul of the people that were working that land and the tenants and paying rent or anything. There was no importance much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there was no importance, that's the way it was, you know. But there was one thing there, I was listening to the previous speaker there about the lie.
Yeah. Would you hold that thought? Would you hold that thought, Donald? Because I want to talk about that, but we have to go to the news. So hold that, and we'll come back to you.
And
the other thing, will you give us your uncle's name once again? Because I think that's important.
Morris Langan.
Morris Langan. That's important, I think, to remember his name in history. And well done on recounting that story. But we'll talk about farming stuff now as well. after the break. We'll take a break, and we will have the news. And just a reminder, we are bringing you updates throughout the day on the count. Anything that happens, we'll bring it to you. So don't worry at all about that. And also, if you want to get rolling coverage as well from online sources, radiokerry.ie, live updates of the Kerry local election, all brought to you by Batrooms for You. Get in touch with us 0667123666. You can text WhatsApp 083 300 3300. We go to break, we'll have the news, and we'll have our updates from the Count Centre, and I'll join you again the next hour.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
There's a fellow here from every field side, but he was a neighbour of his anyway. Got a pet bonnet, and he fattened up the pet bonnet.
Is there a health warning with this story now, Donald? Do we have to be careful?
Oh, I don't know, it's fine.
All right,
fine.
Go on.
Not long at this. But he hit one of anywhere, go up to be fat pig, and he was killed. And the young man put in, what's right, nobody had ever killed a pig before or not. But he said he could anyway, so the owner of the pig implied him to kill the pig anyway. But I don't know much about that particular job. I never liked listening to him speech in the Mon Valley when they'd be killing him. But he'd, anyway. He pretended he could kill the fish, so he killed the fish always, but he couldn't get the blood to flow, so he just said to one of the pigs, it makes sense, he said, that old one of us, a patient who got him, he was a corpse, he said, didn't you know that? And that's the reason, he said, there's no blood in the pit.
it was an amazing time in that sense. And Rita Foley there, she was in one of our episodes for Women in Agriculture, and she was talking about her parents, and you know that they wouldn't go to, say they were out in Drummond in the rural area, that they wouldn't go to Carsevine that often for the shopping, maybe once a month, because maybe for flour or something like that, but that mainly it was on the farm, because like you mentioned the pig, but then like the garden was such an important part as well. And you had your own cow and everything like that, and you could borrow off the neighbour as well. So you were very self-sufficient in that front line, weren't you?
You were, and they had to be, Joe, because there was no... I can remember, even when the first children's allowance came in, it was a half cow. I've forgotten now, there was a song about it at the time. Another time there, still, I was reading about it there recently, in Ireland's own, the old age pension was 10 shillings.
Yeah.
To make ends meet, they cut it a shilling down to 9 shillings on one particular time. I think it hasn't been forgotten yet.
Yeah.
But things were so tight that you couldn't believe it. I remember the rationing during the war there. I know people who smoked tea leaves in the pipe. If you couldn't get tobacco.
Really?
And you could, yeah. You could, you know, people have no idea what it was like, and they were able to make do then. They were do a lot of stuff themselves at home, and that was they were really, like you said there, they were self-sufficient. They were great people, that our ancestors and what they put up with.
Yeah, but then you often hear, oh, they were great old times, like, but is that coloured in, you know, with a bit of, has nostalgia kind of filled it with kind of happy feelings rather than the reality of what it was? Like, you know, say around your teenage years going to your early 20s, do you miss those days, you know, of maybe neighbours calling around and the different social gatherings that were out there, and I suppose the you know, the mahal and people helping out, you know, for different harvest things? Like, do you miss those days, or what way do you look back in them?
You would. I suppose there was a lot of hardships as well, side by side with the good old days, like, you know. And one thing you had all right, Joe, and maybe you had a belief in the hereafter, and you had a belief that if you behaved yourself in this life, that the reward was there at the other side. And I often think, when I think read back there about the famine and some of the stories about it there, that it must have helped those people to be able to think that, well, we've done our best here, but the ward will be at the other side. It has to be some kind of a mental help to them at this side to put up with the hardship that they had to bear.
Lovely message in here, Donald, for you. Hi, Joe, and lots of nice messages coming in for you, Donald. Hi, Joe. I always enjoy listening to Donald O'Connor. He's a mine of information on our history, and that comes in from Charles, and I second that, definitely. And a suggestion here as well, which I think is a good one. Hi, Joe. It's after going off my screen here. One second now, Donald, I'll get it back up again. Hi, Joe. If we have a Norwegian embassy in Dublin, Donald O'Connor could tell them his uncle's story. It may be of interest to them by their royal family. And that comes in from a texter there. So that is true, Donald. You might want to get onto the Norwegian embassy. We might forward on your details to them and tell them get on to you. Would you welcome the Norwegian royal family to Tarbert?
I don't know, would I be able to? I don't think I'd measure up to that height in society,
Well, one thing for sure, they'd have a fine glass of milk waiting for them anyway.
You wonder about putting on the old pair of Wellington's relation.
You'd have to polish the Wellingtons.
But no, it's nice to talk about things and discuss them, but I'll tell you what it's like. What's happening out in Gaza, Joe? There's no answer to the whole thing. That's the way I see it, And you think you have it, you say after the last war and all the wind with it, concentration camps and all that we have learned something, but we seem to be stumbling on and on in the same lines, And I see them there, they're looking down for relief, going in there to gather food and all the rest. And then the following week, there's a big bomb. It's like you'll be getting pigs out for slaughter or something. It isn't your turn yet. We'll feed you this week and we'll kill you next week. Yeah. Why somebody can't stop it, I just don't know.
Donald, thanks a million for coming on, and I think it's great that you've documented your uncle's story and told his story, which I think is so important, and it's always a pleasure to bring you on, and I look forward to visiting you there in Tarbert. We'll have to get a slice of birthday cake off you there. I hear you're celebrating a big birthday there in a few weeks' time.
But one thing there, Joe, we usually finish with a little verse. We're time for a verse there.
Do squeeze it in there, so Donald.
O'Reilly walks the plank, and tis about the farming. As the year of 87 dawned, things on the land were looking grim. Pollution and meat quality had most farmers in a spin, with inspectors tasting every stream and testing every dike. The future for some farmers looked anything but bright. While to add to their confusion and push them to the brink, the powers that be had decided on higher quality for milk. Daly was a man for progress who welcomed measures new. When told he was polluting, he knew just what he must do. The old stall system are finished. The days for bedding are no past. We must build no slatted houses if in farming we're to last. In town the next morning, he walked into the bank and asked to see the manager just to see what he would think. I've been needing 40,000, Daly said, or slightly more. Do a proper job, the manager said. We're prepared to give you more. Daly got his sheds completed. His pride and comfort knew no ends. But his pleasure was sorely dented when the bank sent out his bills. O'Reilly walked a little place some miles out in the hills with very little money left when he had paid his bills. On milk and eggs his life depended, and he was sorely pressed. And the fines were deducted as he failed a quality test. An advisor came to visit him and looked his buildings over. Said he, I think your problem is that dung heap at the door. That pond the doctor using has your very cut for space. I suggest you move your buildings to some other better place. You may be right, says poor O'Reilly, where I am, I hope to stay. What a cost to move them buildings, I could never hope to pay. If the dung heap is the trouble, and that you seem quite sure, then the only problem facing me is where to put that stone manure. You'll fill the pond, said the advisor, to clear up all that muck. Will the pond say, shocked O'Reilly, and what about my ducks? My mother bought the first of them when I was still a boy, and in their pond they're going to swim until the day I die. We'll let us rest the advisor till you've time to think. But don't take too long about it, or they'll turn down your milk. O'Reilly by the fireside sat and pulled some ashes out, and on the hearthstone with the tongs he began to plant things out. A chip and fill out of the fire and span the duck pond door. I sold it to O'Reilly, I have no problem anymore. The two planks I'll cross the duck pond and I'll wheel my barrow over, and not a single pike of dung will I live outside the door. The plan worked and all were happy. The ducks swam in the pond. Meat passed all the quality tests. O'Reilly, life was grand. For each man solved his problem in the way that he thought best. One by keeping up to date, the other by letting things rest. And as to what the future holds, on this I'll be quite frank. While daily slaves to repay his loan, O'Reilly walks the plank.
Good man, Joel O'Connor. Thanks a million. Well done, you've never lost it. Thanks a million for coming on and have a great weekend. That's Joel O'Connor there, local historian from Tarbert. We're going to take a break, and after that, we're going to be getting an update from the Cowan Centre.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
That Terrace Talk tune is a catchy tune. I wonder what it's called. I must find out. Now it's time to return to the Killarney Sports and Leisure Account Centre to hear the latest. And we're going to hear now from Mark Lynch.
Radio Kerry's local election results, live from the Killarney Account Centre. With thanks to Batrooms For You, Kerry's number one batroom company, b4u.ie.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Welcome back to Killarney. Going to take you through the Castle Island local electoral area. A lot of boxes have been opened in the last half an hour in that local electoral area. So far, the tallies are coming in. Now, as we keep saying, the tallies are not the official count. They're very preliminary, but they give us a rough idea anyway of who may be tallying very well. And so far, Jackie Healy-Ray seems to be doing very well indeed. He's at about 33% or so of the vote, may end up getting over 2,000 first preference votes. Another man who's doing quite well off these tallies so far is Charlie Farrelly, currently looking at about 20%, and it looks like another sitting councillor, Bobby O'Connell, as well, is up about 14-15% at the moment, with about, I suppose, maybe between two-thirds and three-quarters of the boxes opened here in Castle Island. And now, as I say, it's not an exact science. There will be probably changes to this when it comes to the official count, but in terms of a rough idea, those three seem to be leading the way, with Fionnán Fitzgerald, another sitting councillor, just behind them again on maybe 12-13%. Of the four first-timer candidates who are looking to get a seat then, Michelle Keane is next on, I suppose, about 9% or so, and then Deirdre Bell is on about 400, which is about 6%. And below that then, we have Courtney Reardon and Paul Bowler, each polling, tallying so far at about 1% or so. So as I say, these are preliminary, they're not exact, they're not the official count, but they give us a good idea that, in fact, the four sitting councillors seem to be tallying very well in the Castle Island local electoral area. So once these boxes have been all sorted through, they'll be put back into... once the votes have been all sorted through, they'll be put back into the box, they'll be sent over to Tralee to join Kirkaguina, and we're going to get a look now at the Kirkaguina local electoral area with Dave Nelligan.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks very much. So all 28 boxes for the Kirkaguina local electoral area have now been tallied. An announcement has just been made in the last couple of minutes as well that they are starting to move them out, and they will be moved by Garda escort over to the John Mitchell's GAA club, where they will be counted later on today. That's expected to get underway in about the next hour or so when they arrive. So looking at the tallies, the electorate for the Kirkaguina LEA is 12,324, and there was just above 60% turnout for the votes. The tally suggests at the moment that Tommy Griffin of Fine Gael is on 23% of the first preference votes, followed by Robert Brosnan of Sinn Féin, 19.1%. Councillor Michael O'Shea is on 15%. He topped the poll last time around, it's important to remember, with 22% of first preference votes. So he's tallying in at 15% at the moment. Councillor Brown Don Fitzgerald is tallying at 13.4%. Patter O'Fanon of the Green Party is on 13.2%. Seamus Cussie Fitzgerald is at 9.6%. And Labour's Mike Kennedy is at around 6.5%. So, yeah, like I said, Joe, they are now starting, as I'm looking over the balcony here, they're starting to move the boxes out towards the their modes of transport. So they'll be on their way to Killarney very soon. And of course, like Mark mentioned, these are only the tallies. Nothing is official yet. And obviously, you'll have transfers and all that. You'll be looking, especially in Kirkaguina, it's quite interesting. Will you be looking more geography-based transfers or party-based transfers, so it's all very open at the moment. But that's the latest here from Cork Aguina and, excuse me, from the Clarny Leisure Centre. Back to you, Joe.
Thanks a million, David Nelligan and Mark Lynch. Caller would like to say how much he enjoyed Donald's segment so much. He's a wonderful intellect and is fascinating to listen to on air whenever she talks to him at the Ramley House. Also from Mary O'Connor from ST. Now here's Matilda Carmody telling us about the upcoming Cruinn an Óg.
Cruinn an Óg is a day with free creative things to try for children and teenagers on Saturday 15th of June.
That is Matilda Carmody, and we'll be talking to Matilda's mother Emma after the break about Cruinn an Óg.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, it is the second Saturday of the month, so that means it's time for our Kerry County Council Creative Kingdom, where we let you know what's going on in the arts world around this wonderful county of ours. And as always, there is plenty going on. We will be talking about the Concordant Festival, and we'll also be talking about Cruinn an Óg. But first, as always, Arts Officer with Kerry County Council is with us, Kate Kennelly. Kate, how are you this morning?
I'm very well, Joe. Good morning to you and to your listeners.
Brilliant. So tell us, what have you been up to?
Well, Joe, it's been really busy since I last saw you. I don't know if you can hear the slight hoarseness in the throat. Since I last saw you, I was over at Scarty Glen at the World Fiddle Day, which was absolutely fantastic. I was actually the Friday night, and you know, I actually felt honoured to be there, because to hear Matt Cranage and Jackie Daly play, and to hear the younger musicians as well, and all the work that PJ Tehan and his committee put in, it was just a fantastic evening, and the music is quite magical really, and it was a super event. I also made it over to Listowel Writers Week and had the absolute pleasure of listening to our president speak. He was absolutely outstanding. He spoke for around 45 minutes, Joe, about the importance of Stowell Writers Week as a festival for writers and the importance of poetry and creativity in the arts. And for most of that, he didn't even have notes in front of him. Now, Joe, I can go off on a tangent and I don't always find my way back. And to see him go off on a few tangents, and he made his way back every time, it was awe-inspiring.
Yeah, he's a great orator, absolutely, isn't he? He's a great orator. Yeah, he's brilliant. I've heard him before, we were up in the RS Nuke on there, myself and a colleague, a few years ago, because when I was involved in community radio, and he was responsible for setting up community radio stations around Ireland when he was minister that time. But yeah, he gave a great speech that time as well. The same thing, he's fairly impressive as a speechmaker.
Well, he, you know, everyone who spoke was really good. The gentleman who introduced him, and obviously the curator of the arts festival itself, the Stone Writers Week, Martin Dyer, they were all fantastic. But he's just really, really amazing. So that was a really good event. Great quality in terms of the work displayed, I suppose, and the events showcased at Writers Week. Great workshops. And, you know, there was a great buzz around the town. I went over on Thursday. I was opening an art exhibition for the Listowel Visual Artists Collective. Over 56 artists in a group, Joe, and some of them paired up with writers for an exhibition in St. John's Theatre with the great Maura Logue, and it was a fantastic event. So Louise, who's kind of overseeing the Listowel Visual Artists Collective, is putting so much energy into it, and is a former arts college graduate who went off working business for years and is now finding her roots. So I said, I think she's living the life I want. But we then, where was I after that? I'm trying to think. Then on Saturday, I was over at KFS. That was the June bank holiday. And just to see the quality of the work again, Joe, the town was buzzing and the streets were full. Plo the Heladina comes into mind, absolutely full of people and a great atmosphere. They had lovely family events, and the quality of the art exhibition throughout the town was fantastic. I didn't go to the concert, so I just couldn't last that long, but it was really good. And again, we've loads of things coming up, Joe, so once you've spoken to Mike, who has a great programme, and Emma as well, who talk about next week, I'll give a quick run through. We have an Onam Summer Arts programme in Killarney, so the Little Arts and Cultural Centre there, Onam. It's just a programme of events from the Killarney Arts Working Group and some other arts providers, and we're calling it ASAP for Onam Summer Arts Programme.
Very clever.
So I'll go through that and see a few more bits.
Yeah, I love that name, very clever. Well, it is time to talk to Creative Communities Engagement Officer Emma Carmody about Cruinn an Óg. Emma, what's going on in Cruinn an Óg?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me on. We've got a load of stuff planned now for next Saturday. So there's stuff happening all around the county, and there are events for all ages. We tried to have a particular focus this year on, you know, having more items there for teenagers, because oftentimes it's, you know, it's the mid-range group of kids who can probably be the most open, you know, to attending these things, and maybe availability as well. So in terms of the teenagers, just as I'm talking about it, we do have some special things, in particular later events. One of these is in Killorglin, and if anybody had been out in K-Fest, they would have seen the Peggy's Angels this year and last year. So you've got Dara and Rochelle there, who'd be a big part of the K-Fest organisation, and they're from they're going to be having it in Killorglin on near the library place from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. and so it's for teenagers to come along and kind of reinvent one of these sculptural angel pieces. So that's a lovely one. And the other later event is in Listowel, so there'll be a screening of the youth theatre production. It's called The Curious Incident of the Night and the Dog, or The Dog in the Nighttime, and that one's going to be in St. John's Church. And also then in St. John's throughout the whole day, there's going to be a lovely puzzle mural that they're putting together. So it's all about, you know, inclusion and how, you know, we're all the same even though we all have our differences. So there's a really nice aspect to that as well for teens. And then outside of that, we have, there's plenty of other things. There's dance classes in Killarney and Tralee, in Sheamsa and in Killarney House and Gardens. There's also a lovely felting workshop in Castle Island Library, which is kind of, you know, from your maybe 9 years old up to your 18s. And there's stop motion workshops happening in Annam with Kif is organising those, and there's a film screening as well. There's going to be circus workshops for all ages from 5 up to 18 in Tralee Library. That's what one of our strategic partners, Isaac, so they're a street art and spectacle organisation from Galway. Cara Savine as well has a lovely story through dance workshop happening for all ages. And then there's STEAM activities in Sheam Satira. There's pottery, art and meditation, printing and musical theatre all happening up in Collisands and Tralee as well. And then not to be forgetting Dingle out west, we have a lovely couple of things going on in the library and in the D-shirt and also in Ballyfurter. So there's things for all ages, including even some smally events. So like that one in Ballyfurter, the art with Anya, Ali and Dugacena, basically. So it's from 0 to 18. So in fairness to Anya, she's going to be facilitating from the babies all the way up to the teenagers. And the same then in a D-shirt, there's a day-long thing happening with one of our creative community projects, Ben Darnley. He's also hosting like a mini masterpiece workshop, so kind of recreating like a stained glass piece, like the Harry Clark stuff that's in there.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's going to be all day, the same as the one in Listowel and St. John's. It's just drop-in. People can just come and go. So while a lot of the events do need to be booked, those are two in particular that people can just drop into. The other thing is, even in Sheamsa, the STEAM workshops, the marble run is appropriate for smallies as well. So that's a drop-in all day. And there's lovely musical workshops happening in Annam with the Macademy. And in Cara Savine as well, those story time dances are good for all ages.
Yeah, so Emma, there's loads happening. That's an unbelievable list of things that are happening. I know parents are run ragged going here, there and everywhere, but they should be encouraged to bring their smallies, like you mentioned, their kids, their teenagers to these events, because they're so important, aren't they?
They really are. You know, I think, like, I don't know, in this day and age as well, there's a lot going on for young people and there's a lot of pressure on them. And I think just having even one day of kind of letting your creativity out and like releasing whatever's built up inside you. So a lot of these things, you know, they might be very active physically, and some of them are just getting your head down and just doing something, just expressing yourself. So the libraries have been brilliant this year as well, in terms of running events. We have something on in each library branch. And then, yeah, like the County Museum and stuff are all involved. So while people do need to book, and, you know, it's a little bit of organisation needed for the parents, there's things segregated through the day, so people should be able to attend more than one event.
Yeah.
So it's definitely worth looking into. The brochure should be well distributed now at this stage this week. They would have been in the Kerryman on Wednesday, so those are still available, and the library branches are holding all of the brochures. We've also done a huge amount of work. I have to give a shout out to the girls in the office for helping me put brochures into envelopes and getting addresses for all the schools. So all the primary schools will be getting a bundle of the brochures as well, just for the class teachers to have.
Very good. And can you get information online as well, Emma?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've an online brochure as well on the Arts Office website. So it's arts.kerryco.ie and it can be downloaded there. And we've been sharing it on our social media pages as well. So there's links there back to our own arts page that you'll be able to see it. And then, of course, on the national website. So it's all funded through Creative Ireland. And Creative Ireland have their own Crinu and Oak website. So it's crinu.creativeireland.gov.
And the date, once again?
It's the 15th of June, Saturday the 15th. So events are happening from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. So something excellent for everybody, definitely worth checking out.
Definitely. Brilliant. Well, Kerry County Council Creative Communities Engagement Officer, Emma Carmody, thanks a million for coming on and telling us all about it.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you.
Joe, can I just say a big thank you to Emma as well? There's over 72 events organised across Kerry. So Emma would have issued a call out to creative people to be involved and also to young people to know what they wanted to do, and ably assisted by the team in the office, put together this amazing programme. And as Emma said, it is co-funded by Creative, well, it's mainly funded by Creative Ireland. We'll have to cost our time and energy too, I suppose, and all the events are completely free. So hopefully people will come out and make the most of this wonderful day, Joe.
Brilliant. Well, from that wonderful day to a wonderful festival that's taking place very shortly, the Concorton Music Festival, I'm delighted to say Mike Moriarty joins us. Mike, you're very welcome. When is it on, first of all?
Thanks very much, Joe, for having us. It's on the 28th, the 29th and 30th of June.
Very good. And it promises to be a great event. Give us the highlights.
The highlights, I suppose, always of the is the traditional concert, which kind of kicks off the whole weekend, Joe. And you're talking about it starts maybe 8 o'clock, and it's an action packed 3 hour show. And this year we have the Curtin brothers, who'd be a relation of the great Con Curtin. They'd be his grand nephews, Dara and Garode, who are much acclaimed musicians who have multiple titles won, and that's going to be a fantastic Curtin riser. And we've got Cuiva and Emer Flannery also, who are local musicians who are absolutely a fantastic duet, and they'll be also taking part in the show. You'll also have dancers, storytelling, but the main act on the night will be Dune Road. They're a new band now. We'll say they'll be steeped in Slieve Lucre, with the Pat Fleming from Kish Game, the box player, and Conor Dolly on fiddle. And then you've got Simon Graham and Fiona Hanlon, they'd be two Tipperary boys. So they're a new band, and we're very excited about that. And it'll be very Slieve Lucre based, but like, they are an entertaining group. And as I said, it's a fantastic show to come to, and it always gives a great lift. And anyone then that wants to, afterwards, they can go up to the local bars, and that'll be a pub trail above, nice music, and all welcome. If you're not on the list, come and join and start the festival. Like, but you know, it's a great curtain raiser the Friday. To a great weekend.
Yeah, I love the way you say curtain raiser. And, pardon the pun. And it is in Brosna. We should say that now for people that, you know, came from outer space. Yes. They wouldn't know where it's going on. And you're right in the Slieve Lucre area there as well. So I can imagine
right in the middle of the show. I'm just touching on a few things, but it's on our Facebook page anyway, all the information, the Concorton Music Festival, and there's QR link to if anyone wants to register or anything. And so all the main information is on that, but I'm just giving you a snippet this evening.
Yeah,
and you said about the workshops as well. Like, we've got fantastic, we have 5 great tutors in the workshops this year. With Emma Flannery, concertina. Emma is a local girl, like, from Rockchapel, and she actually won the highly acclaimed the Bon Oro Rita gold medal, and she's multiple All-Ireland titles. So she's on concertina. Gary Shannon is on the flute and the tin whistle, and he speaks for himself, the member of the great Shannon family and the great Tilfin Nora band. You have Diarmaid O'Maher, accordion from Cork. He teaches in UCC, and he's also he won Young Musician of the Year in 2022, that was the TG Cahir Young Musician of the Year. And the guy I really like the most is, I suppose, Andre Palantri. He's a guy that was born in Italy, raised in London, went to Venice, learned classical fiddle, and he, listening to his mother's traditional tapes from Scotland, turned to traditional music and just loves it now. So, like, you know, you don't have to be born in Slieve Lucre to play Slieve Lucre music. So he's on fiddle. And then you've got Aisling Neville, a local girl, and banjo, who's 7 All-Ireland titles, and just she toured with Pjolts and everything. So the workshops are going to be fantastic. So we encourage all musicians, young and old, no matter what standard you are, to come along, and that's just a fantastic part of our festival.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And
Mike,
on the,
yeah, go on. And final point to this.
Yeah, we've also got, we'll say, the KLA fiddle recitals on the Saturday, singing with Evelyn Connell and Michael O'Connor being our main hosts. You know, your pub trails, the whole it's an action packed weekend, and it's really, and for the person that doesn't like a pint, there's loads of stuff outside the bar, and the person that likes a pint, you can come along. There's great music in the pub trails as well all weekend, you know.
Yeah, and even going into the pub, like, you can enjoy it without having the pint as well. You know, it's always a great gathering.
Well,
yeah.
I can't agree with that, no, Joe, because I run the bar myself, so like we'll have to encourage that to plenty drink.
Well, I own a brewery, Mike, but, but where can people go for more information? I want to bring Kate in on one final point, but where can people go for more information?
Well, we've got our website is www.theconcordmusicfestival.ie, and of course we've got a Facebook, and we'll have loads of brochures out, we'll have flyers, we'll be sending them out, you know, in the next couple of weeks. But the Facebook page, I suppose, is the big one, the Concord Music Festival. You'll get all the relevant information, and I just like to thank to Kate and Clive and Amber and all the people in the arts, like, you know, every bit of funding we get is vital. You know, for these festivals to carry on, and like they're very supportive and great people, like, locally.
Yeah, well, Mike, you definitely whetted the appetite there. Anyway, Kate, we were talking about Cruinniú na n-Óg and the importance for young people, you know, of these events. But this kind of a festival is so important to kind of, I suppose, re-emphasize our traditions and have it there front and center, and its stories of the festival, the enjoyment, the crack. And I don't underestimate the amount of work that actually goes into festival, being involved in them myself, and Kate, with all your experience, the amount of work that actually goes in to those few days. But they're so vital, aren't they, to preserving our culture?
They really are, Joe. And I actually said it at Writers Week when I went up to present the award, and was asked to say a few words, which I hadn't expected to do. But I did. I congratulated the festivals, because in a rural county like Kerry, and we have really good art centres, but it's a very large county, and the festivals are just so integral to showcasing what is really happening on the ground. And as you said, for young people to get involved, so to see the work, to see the best of the best, and to want to be part of it. And these workshops as well, like the Slieve Lucre Music Trail, as you know, we've been involved in for years. But the trail wouldn't exist without the likes of Mike and his committee and the young performers he's just mentioned, because it's all about the vibrancy on the ground, and it's all about the living tradition. And it's this unique cultural heritage that the likes of the Concurton Music Festival help keep alive. So, you know, I always feel very humbled when Mike is saying thank you, because look, we're just trying to enable what you do, which is essential
thanks
to keeping
good
arts and culture alive, you know.
Yeah, well said.
Absolutely.
Well, Mike, best of luck with the festival, and I'm sure you'll
thanks,
have
Joe.
Great crowds, and hopefully the sun will shine down on you. But thanks
absolutely
a million for coming on.
Thanks for having us on, Joe. Thank you.
Now we're going to take a break, and we'll have more from Kate after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
You're listening to Kerry County Council Creative Kingdom, and Arts Officer with Kerry County Council, Kate Kennelly, is still with us. So, Kate, what have you coming up for us?
Joe, we have quite a few things coming up. And before I go into the Annam ASAP program, which is our Annam summer arts program, just to give your listeners a reminder that Jesse Gilbert has commenced as the Kerry County Council, co-funded by the Arts Council, filmmaker in residence for this year. And Jesse has put a call out. He's looking for community groups who are interested in a one day or a series of workshops. Also emerging filmmakers who would like to avail of one-to-one mentoring. And they can get in contact with Jesse directly by emailing him at jgilbertfilm@gmail.com, or else they can contact the arts office just at arts@kerryco.ie. Docus Drama Group, then, who are from Killarney and do great work, are doing a lovely evening with Joyce, stories, songs and poems celebrating the life and work of James Joyce on the 14th of June at Muckross House and Gardens, and on the 16th of June at Annam. And for more details, you can just go to Docus Drama Group Killarney's Facebook page. The Kerry Traveller Health and Community Development Project have an exhibition entitled Embracing Our Heritage, Celebrating Irish Traveller Identity, as part of Traveller Pride 2024, and that is on display in the Kerry County Museum, Joe, until the end of June. And then the Ballybunion Arts Festival are actively looking for submissions for their English and Irish language poetry competitions and their photography competition, and the deadline for all of this is the 30th of June, and all details are on their website, which is www.ballybunionartsfestival.ie. and then the Kinmare Arts Festival are looking for submissions for original unpublished poems inspired by paintings from local and national artists for their Poets Meet Painters competition, which is a lovely title, Joe, and the deadline for that is the 8th of July, and more details are on their website, which is kenmarearts.com. And just to mention then the Annam, as I said, the summer arts program, it actually kicked off the end of May, but coming up, and we missed talking about one of the events at the start of June, but there's another one June the 13th. Colthus, Killarney Colthus, are doing a lovely evening from 7 to half 8, and that's free. On the 15th, Grace Foley is doing a performance, and you can contact, again, we'll have all the contact details up on our website, Joe, because there's charges to some events, not to others. On the 16th of June, the Oakus Drama Group are doing their performance, as I mentioned. On July the 6th, you've the the Killarney School of Music from 7 to 8.15. And on the 13th and 14th of July, Grace is doing workshops from 10 to 1. And then there's a lovely Wise Wool project as well, Felting for Children, on the 20th of July from 11 to half 1. And Saturday the 20th, Grace is doing a lovely performance, Grace Foley. And then on Wednesday the 24th and 25th, Me and the Moon are doing workshops in art, and that's on from 3 to 5. And on the 27th then, we're back with the Killarney School of Music. So there's some really nice things happening. And it goes right into August, Joe. But all the details will be on the arts website, which is